Welcome to One Interview, One World. This is Lainey Kay, and this is a show about interviewing people from all walks of life because everyone has a story to share and we can all learn from each other. I hope you enjoy listening.
And one morning on the way to work, I was working in Czech Republic at the time. I was feeling really bad, really weird already. Like, oh, it's just like pressure in my chest and oh, not good. Also didn't sleep much like always. And then I literally collapsed in the middle of the hotel lobby, this beautiful marble gold lobby, you know, just amazing place. And boom, I collapsed there, get a panic. And now thinking back, it was a really interesting image because I had always associated success with wearing a tie and wearing a proper suit, you know, like looking really successful. Yeah. And in that moment, I had to take all that off, right? I had to take off my tie because I couldn't breathe and took off my jacket, even took off my shoes. And there I was laying in the lobby. And that really was sort of the turning point, right? That was the end to that career. And there was this thought, or I don't know, voice sounds a little bit, oh my God, there was a voice, but this idea came up. Okay, either you're going to die here in this lobby, or you're going to change your life. And both is better than what you're doing right now.
Today, I'm with Jan Brodus, an entrepreneur, speaker, and coach with his company, JB Coaching and Consulting. Jan will share with us how he overcame a work burnout event and how it changed his life. Jan works with clients to help them live a successful, ambitious, and prosperous life without compromising their health and happiness. Thank you, Jan, for being with us today, and I'm looking forward to learning more about you.
Yes, me too. Thank you so much for having me. And the pre-talk already was really, really nice with you. So I'm happy for the proper conversation now. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. I would say, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and then what happened with the event?
Yeah sure. So as you said, like now, like my role today is I'm a coach and consultant, and we work with different companies, large and small, and some really big ones actually, like Mercedes-Benz, and help them do like burnout prevention programs and things like that, and work one-on-one with clients to deal with the stress and overwhelm. So that's what I do nowadays. And I would say my biggest passion is my family, so my wife. We have two kids. We just had another baby 3 months ago, so that's really, really important for me. And we live in Palma de Mallorca in Spain. And I'll let you know in a little bit like how we ended up here, because it's sort of like a longer journey, literally a longer journey, how we ended up here. Yeah, sometimes I say like in my first life or so, I didn't have to do anything with that, like with personal growth or personal development or any of that. It really all started, it was quite funny. My first career started at a sort of graduation party or something like this. You know, after high school, people, those kids hang out. They don't have anything to do in between high school and college or whatever they do after that. And I didn't know what to do. And then at one party late at night, a guy who had graduated a year earlier, he said, well, why don't you work in hospitality like I do? I found this great company. They're really supportive and you'd be really good at it. You'd love it. Said, oh yeah, okay, why not? And again, it's this typical situation, I don't know what to do with my life. So I just said, oh yeah, whatever, that sounds good, let me do that. So I applied to work in a hotel, had never worked in hotels before, I didn't know anything about it. But funny enough, they accepted me into one of their programs. Okay, so I did that, sort of figured out it was quite nice, it was fun, and you get to travel a lot, and they give you discounts for the hotels, and it was all nice. And then this sort of ambition for success grew, like from, I would say day to day, probably even. I said, oh my God, I get a lot of praise when I do those things and they really like what I do. And I can see what the general manager does. I want to be one of them. And then this ambition sort of grew, this goal. I want to be a general manager at one of those big 5-star hotels. And I learned about this, one of those fast track programs, how to get there. And then I applied for that. And they said, you have to study in order to get in. That I studied quickly for 3 years to get a degree, then went back and applied. And on the day of my graduation ceremony, they called and said, okay, you're part of the program and you're going to be GM within 3 to 5 years. So really quickly, at a really young age. So, okay, that's amazing. And everybody was celebrating around, but I already had this funny feeling, oh, you're all celebrating, you think it's amazing, but you have no idea what it'll take for me to do that. So I already had this doubt, this funny feeling, this is not all good news. It's going to be really tough. And course, I didn't listen to that voice. I just went ahead and said, oh yeah, it's going to be amazing. And then again, by the age of 27, I'd worked in 9 different countries or so. And one morning on the way to work, I was working in Czech Republic at the time. I was feeling really bad, really weird already. Like, oh, chest, like pressure in my chest and oh, not good. Also didn't sleep much like always. And then I literally collapsed in the middle of the hotel lobby, this beautiful marble gold lobby, you know, just amazing place. And boom, I collapsed, I get a panic. And now thinking back, it was a really interesting image because I had always associated success with wearing a tie and wearing a proper suit, you know, like looking really successful. Yeah. And in that moment, I had to take all that off, right? I had to take off my tie because I couldn't breathe and took off my jacket, even took off my shoes. And there I was laying in the lobby. And that really was sort of the turning point, right? That was the end to that career. And there was this thought, or I don't know, voice sounds a little bit, oh my God, there was a voice, but this idea came up. Okay, either you're going to die here in this lobby, or you're going to change your life. And both is better than what you're doing right now. And that was really shocking at the time because I didn't think I was doing bad. I thought everything was good. I was really successful at what I did. As I said, I'd worked in so many different countries. And only then I realized, oh my God, Jan, this isn't successful at all, what you're doing. That isn't sustainable and you're feeling horribly. And yeah, that really sparked the idea of changing something about my life. That was the big turning point for me. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You said you were working different countries and you were working a lot of hours, I take it, and managing a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. So it all started really, like after that training, then you get to go maybe to another country for a few months, do like a cross exposure. And then in hospitality, you never really work longer than maybe 1.5, 2 years in one place. Like they really want you to work, change a lot, at least over here in Europe. And so you get to be in many different countries because also Europe is small, right? You drive a few hours in a different country. So probably within the US, it would have been like 9 different states or so.
Okay.
Yeah. And long hours and it's also part of that culture that people take pride in working long hours. So I remember my longest shift or so was 26 hours in a row. And it was like, oh my God, I worked 26 hours. And now that wouldn't be so much of a status symbol anymore for me. But back then it was. And it was regarded as, oh my God, yeah, Jan worked like an entire day.
What was the average work week?
What would it be? Like days were probably like 12, 14 hours. Like we never left really the office during daylight, more or less. Yeah, it was really crazy. And and now I say it was by choice too, right? I chose to take on extra things and I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the recognition you got through working long hours. Mm-hmm. And also after that whole, like this big formal breakdown, right? People said, oh Jan, didn't you see this coming? What happened? And at the time I would always say, no, I have no idea. My God, it just happened. But really, now you have a lot of time to reflect afterwards. I thought, oh, there were so many symptoms along the way. And I remember specifically, I was working in London before. I was sitting in the office at 11 or so, and like my face is twitching. And I'm just, I'll just get another coffee or so, right? The 10th coffee of the day. Mm-hmm. Just sort of like try to make it go away. And just seeing it as, okay, that's just part of life, so to say, or not being able to sleep and all those things. And now I would say those are not experiences that are part of life. This is not normal life. This is not what a human should be experiencing. Like face twitching is not part of the normal human experience. It's something to look at. And at the time, I just never took it seriously. Yeah.
And then it would take a toll on, you know, your loved ones or the people that are around you if you're working that much.
Yeah. Yeah. And also that's at the time I didn't think about that at all, but I hadn't spoken with my parents in a month, probably had we spoken with friends and,
you know, no social life really.
No. And I did have a girlfriend at the time. She was working at the same hotel in London with me. But yeah, I didn't get to see her much, right? Because at night you come home late and she wasn't happy at all with what I did or how I did it.
Right.
She liked what I did, but not how I interpreted my role at the time. Yeah. And in that way it was very selfish too, because people around me weren't very happy with me and I wasn't supportive at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the hospitality industry, then, is that normal for everybody and that's expected?
I think it is. The funny thing is, I think many industries, once you talk to them, they claim, well, we are the most, like, we're the hardest working, or we, you know, like, everybody sort of claims that. The bankers probably do it, the doctors, or so they claim to be that. There always is this ethos around it, but really is there's a lot of hours in hospitality, I think, in general. And it's a very, maybe it's changing now, but very hierarchical system too. It's almost like military, right? You start really at the bottom and you have to work your way up, and you have those superiors, and everybody has gone through this, and now they, oh, now it's their time to sort of punish almost like the lower ranks, right? And everybody's happy once they've achieved something, and now they're able to let the others work. I would say there's long hours in general. Yeah. And it is, in a way, it's funny because it also brings the group really close together, because if you're working on Christmas, for example, or New Year's or other holidays,
that becomes your family, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody else is celebrating, and then you sort of, it bonds. You get a really special bond with your colleagues, because that's who you celebrate Christmas with at work. So there's also positive to it. It's also nice to have that really tight bond with people, but it, yeah, it definitely can become crazy quickly.
Like, it's just, number one, it was super hard on your body. It sounds like you were in a very stressful situation, and it took a toll on your body.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this also is, people just, whether it be in hospitality or other industries, people just take it, yeah, that's just what it is. Like I said earlier, not being able to sleep or having to have a glass of wine at night, and it's just normal these days. But if you look at some sort of like stress models or burnout models, like all those things, those are all signs of stress and some sort of coping mechanism, some behavior. And that's just not, as I said, not normal living. Like, for us, it has become normal, but you should be able to sleep properly. That's just...
Yeah, that's like that's a red flag, huh?
yeah. And or feeling anxious and stuff. And it's just normal. And nowadays, then everybody takes CBD oil things. And that's just part of the culture. That's just all normal. But really, it shouldn't be, in my opinion. That's just not normal human behavior. And I do that too, right? I have a coffee when I'm tired. But really, I should be thinking about, hey, am I sleeping enough? Am I exercising enough? Am I really looking after myself or not? But people, I think we're all just way too stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become normal. I think that's the dangerous bit of it.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, like, our parents didn't talk to us about these things either. You know, we just saw them working hard and we just assumed, okay, this is the norm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think then it's a really interesting discussion around what success is, right? So to me at the time was, okay, success is wearing a tie and wearing a suit and going to your office and working there and being important. But maybe there's a different definition to success that we can follow now. And there's probably very individual definition for each one of us. Like, you will have success might mean something different for you than to me. And back then it was only associated with my job title. All right, that was the only thing. It wasn't even associated so much with money. Like, I didn't care about money at all, but more about the title.
That was prestige.
Yeah, that's what I was after at the time. And now it's a lot more, okay, having a well-balanced family life and spending time with my children and with my wife. And that's success to me, because being healthy, because I was very unsuccessful in a way, because collapsing the lobby that's not successful. It's whatever title you have, it's not a successful interpretation of the role if you collapse.
Right. And you had to recuperate for a while afterwards.
Yes. Yeah. It takes a long time. Like, once you really mess up your system like that, it takes a long time. For me, I was in like one of those clinics for two months to like stationary the whole time there. And then I didn't work for an entire year. And even, let's say, really like the last symptoms for everything to be gone, to be fully back to normal almost, it takes a few years probably. Yeah. I mean, it would be different for everybody, I assume. But it's not like a quick fix, in my opinion. Yeah. So we really need to be mindful about not getting there, right?
That's such a good point.
Yeah, and again, the body sends so many signals along the way, right?
It's like
if we were just to listen. And I sometimes compare it with it's like a highway, and you live in Southern California, right? So let's say like a highway from Los Angeles to San Diego. And then maybe if you leave Los Angeles, there's a sign, San Diego this way, and then there's another sign. They become bigger and bigger, and then it's like, oh, 5 more miles, 2 more miles, and then it's like this big, big, big sign. Okay, now you're there, right? You cannot miss San Diego anymore. You're in the middle of it. And that's how it is with stress, in my opinion. There's so many signs along the way, and there's so many exits as well. You can exit anywhere. Encinitas, is that somewhere in between? I'm not sure, right? Little towns, you can always exit that stress road, but we I would just say generalize it, we tend not to, right? We just, mm-hmm. although the signs are there, yeah, like not being able to sleep, feeling anxious, having those twitching in your face, social distancing, not in the corona way, but distancing yourself.
You're not having a healthy lifestyle. Yeah, your work is all there is. And yeah, you need a break. And just in general, I'm glad that companies are addressing those things, because it is such a work environment where they expect so much of you and don't think like 8 hours isn't enough, or it's just the culture. And so I want that to change. And I'm glad that you're teaching about that, because I don't even think it should be 5 days a week working. And I'd be nice if it was less than 8 hours. And,
Yeah. And the funny thing about that too, is those are not, how do you say, laws of nature. It's not like gravity or so that you work 8 hours. It's totally made up, right? Like at some point we decided, oh, you will have to work 8 hours, but they could have decided 7.5, right? Yeah. Or they could have decided 6. And then we'd be all following 6 hours and be freaking out about 6 hour workdays. It's super arbitrary. The same with 5 days a week, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same. And I think a good thing also about this time now is many people, just over here in Europe, but I hear this in the US as well, there's like war for talent. People are really trying to get good people, and it's not so easy to find people.
That's
depending
true.
On the type of job.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, and many companies, they're trying to rethink the way they operate. Okay, we need to offer them a better work-life balance or better culture. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel all the younger companies with maybe younger founders or so, younger CEOs, they want to change that as well. So there is a lot of change. But I do also see in big companies that have been around for hundreds of years, things are really dusty and just static, and it takes a long time for things to change.
Yeah,
definitely it is changing in the right direction. And again, I think even the generation younger than I am, I'm 37 now, but like the graduates now, I have friends who run startups in Germany, and they have a hard time finding somebody who wants a full-time job, right? The young graduates, they just say, no, I'm not working full-time, why should I? I do part-time, enjoy my life, and
That's good, though. I like that. I like that the new generation is thinking like that. It's hard for the old generation to understand that, because they still have like, what do you mean you're not here working really hard on this program that I need done? Yeah. And they're like, but I have a life. I don't want to kill myself. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's got to change. And so it's getting, the older generation more open to it. But I agree with you in regards to like the new companies and the young companies. And I like one thing where I've heard where you just don't even have like hours set. And as long as they get their job done, it doesn't matter how long it takes them to get their job done. As long as they're getting it done, then the manager doesn't care.
Yeah,
I think that's
exactly.
Cool, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then of course, let's say hospitality again, it's difficult there if you're working like in the operational part, right?
Yeah.
You have to be there for 8 hours to serve guests. It's not like, okay, I've served everybody, I'm going home now. All right, I'm closing the doors.
Yes. It would be hard to structure that.
Yeah, exactly. But still there can be different models even there, or training them how to deal with stress and mindfulness programs or whatever they may be. There's ways for that industry as well, or others like, let's say, manufacturing, right, where you can't just leave your job at the assembly line and say, oh, I don't feel like it today, right? Like one screw is missing in your car, and then
that's true. It wouldn't work there. But I think less hours where they could really be fresh and not make mistakes and not be overworked, and I think that would be important. And the same in like the medical industry. Like I feel like that needs to change so much, where they make people work where they're, you know, like what you were doing. Maybe they work a whole 24-hour shift, and like, how can you be thinking straight or really learning? Yeah. You know? So there's a lot of industries that would be nice to see change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't want to have like an accident at 4 a.m. and being operated by a person who's been awake for 24 hours. And then, okay, please save my life now. Right? How is that going to work? Yeah. So it's, there's so much to do in that area. Absolutely.
Why don't you tell me then what, you know, when you you're like, I can't do this anymore. What am I going to do with my life? What happened there?
Yeah. So we like the next step, the funny thing was, in hindsight, it's funny, right? At the time it was almost stupid, but it was quite funny. So I left Czech Republic, went to Germany for 2 weeks, and they said, well, just take 2 weeks off and come back after that, right? I said, okay, yeah, I'll take the time off. And I know it was quite funny. I went to my father's house, and because my parents are divorced, and my mother, she was in Africa, like at a project. And then my dad and his wife, they had booked something like a fasting retreat where you don't eat for a while to detox your body. And it's quite famous over here. I'm not sure if that's a thing in the US.
It's kind of becoming a more common, I don't think a retreat, but I, you know, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and they did that, and they said, well, you have to come with us because I was having panic attacks all the time while driving a car, while being in the supermarket, while going on the bus. So I couldn't really stay on my own for a week, which was hard to acknowledge at the age of 27, because really you're an adult and all of a sudden you're back to being very dependent.
Yeah.
And so I was at this retreat center, seeing all these people not eating. Of course, I was eating because I needed some some energy. But I was seeing all them, and I thought, oh, these are all weird people. They're not eating. They're all like some hippies, and I don't know, what do they know? And I'm the successful manager. And then after a few days, I realized I'm the unhappiest person in this whole place, right? I'm miserable. I collapsed. And they're running 10K every morning without having eaten. And they're dancing. Wow. And they're just happy. And they're full of energy. And I'm not. And that really sparked my interest in what they were doing there. And they had this like retreat host or something. I talked with them. And they showed me meditation for the very first time. And they're just, oh, my God, I'm as if the sun was shining within me. It was just amazing what I experienced there. And so I learned a little bit about that, right? Very little, but still, okay, that's really interesting. But then again, like this ego kicked in and said, okay, Jan, now you have those tools. Now you can go back and be even quicker, be even better than everybody else, because now you know how to meditate, right? After I've been shown it once. And so I did go back actually one day. But I had major panic attacks again. And that night I left and never came back. And I was just sort of like trying to keep my, keep my face. I just say like, okay, I was like not showing to anywhere, but I just packed my stuff, said, okay, see you tomorrow. And then at night I just burst out in tears and cried for 3 hours at home, because I was just so, sad, and also just, I just realized, okay, this was it. I cannot do this any longer. Yeah. And then then this whole journey starts of therapy and blah blah blah. I tried so many different things. I went to this clinic for 2 months, which was really good.
So this clinic for two months. Just give us a brief explanation about it.
Yeah, this is quite common. Actually, I don't know if there are many of those places in the US. In Europe, it's quite common. There's like a clinic, and you're being admitted as if you're going to a hospital, but it's also fully paid for by the insurance, and you're being admitted as an emergency, as if your leg was broken, you go to the hospital, and you are mental health issues, so to say, right? And it's not like a psych ward and not like crazy people, but people with depression, people with addiction, like everything, burned out people. And it's funny, this place actually was like an old hotel. So again, interesting. So, and you, I was staying there for 2 months, and as if you're staying in a hotel, but you have like the group therapy in the morning. Or it all started usually in the morning, really early at like 7 o'clock or so, with walking through nature without speaking for half hour or so, then doing maybe yoga meditation, then eating.
Goodness, that's so neat.
Yeah, it was really nice.
That, that I know of in America. I mean, there might be, but the health system, absolutely not. Like that would not be paid for.
Yeah.
You know, you might get, you might be lucky where you could go get therapy, you know, where you could go talk to someone, but even that would be limited. Maybe you could do it once a week. You might get 20, you know, 10 or 20 hours. I mean, it's just nothing like that. I love that, because that's, you know, thinking about you as a whole person and that you, you need help, and it's caring about the people and they're, that's sad. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that there's things like that.
Yeah. It's sort of like a 2 month retreat, like really deep experience. Yeah. It was really nice. And then you have like one-on-one sessions, group sessions several times a week, a day, actually, not a week, a day. And then like dancing, painting, yoga, like whatever, like all those things. Yeah. And like really good food, like all, it was this was like all organic, mainly raw. And
this is fantastic. Like,
Wow. All those things.
That's what everybody needs.
Yeah, exactly. And the interesting thing there were people from different countries too, all German speaking, but different countries, Austria, Switzerland. And there was one lady from Luxembourg, and she said, we can do this every other year. This is being paid for us, just in case there ever is anything we want to look at or work through. And
I want that.
And she had lost her father, I think, the year before. And she said, I'm just coming here to grieve for 2 months. Said, okay, cool. That's amazing to even being allowed that space to properly grieve, rather than just, I'm a little bit sad, but I go on with life. Yeah, it was really, really good, very helpful. And there, obviously, I learned a lot of things, and that really got me more interested in this whole area. And so then I went back and, I went to another, like a proper retreat, not a clinic, but then at some point I went to a retreat. And while I was sitting there, it was a big one. There were probably 100 people or so. And I thought, okay, there must be people working here as well, right? There's the retreat host. There's so many assistants. Somebody must be organizing this whole place. Maybe I can work for a company like that. Maybe that'd be interesting rather than going back into hotels. And so I send an application from my bedroom at night to that company and say, okay, maybe I can help you organize your retreats or something. I know something about hospitality, blah, blah. And so actually then I got the job there and I started working with them and started helping organize those big retreats. And they did a lot of them. And but again, it was funny there. I'd gotten this job. And then again, like sometimes like the old, I call it now ego, or like this, all that old world sort of kicks in. Then I receive an email from like a headhunter or somebody. And they say, oh, so we see you've done this and this revenue management in Czech Republic. We're looking for a revenue manager for 3 hotels in Ukraine, like even further Eastern Europe, Ukraine, like some other countries in that area. Are you interested? And I was like this old, whatever that is, was reignited. I said, oh my God, yes, I can even be more successful and have 3 hotels instead of 2. And and then I stopped myself, luckily. So, what are you doing? You're just trying to get out of it. But it only took one email for me to be sucked into this old way of thinking again. Yeah. Then I started working for this retreat company, and that was really nice. And for the first time, really, my adult work life, I got to learn how to work like a normal job, not crazy hours. And you know, you left at 4 in the afternoon. So, okay, what do I do now? It's like the whole day is still free. I didn't really know that. And that was quite interesting also to still do something, but still look after myself a lot. And I learned a lot there about coaching. And then people started asking me, okay, and you're doing so much better now than you did a few years ago. Can you give me some advice? Can you tell me what you did? I said, yeah, sure, why not? We can have coffee, I tell you. And then I realized, I got more into this coaching role, and then I got educated in that area and trained, and I thought, oh, yeah, that'd be really fun. But first it all started just by people asking me and me doing it for myself, right? It wasn't my intention to become a coach one day. Mm-hmm. But then I sort of gradually got into that, and it was really nice. And then after a couple of years at this company, I quit and then started my own thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was quite funny too, actually. Then I thought, okay, I'm doing this like coaches retreat in Bali, right? It was like 1 week in Bali or 10 days or 2 weeks, 10 days probably. Okay, my girlfriend and I said, okay, let's go to Bali for 2 months, you know, do this retreat and then hang out for a while. And so then we never came back for an entire 3 years. And we were just, from there, we continued traveling and all over. And this was then our whole 3 year around the world trip, where we also got to Southern California for the first time. And that's why we have clients there. And this was really nice then too. Yeah.
So you're like, this is great. I can have work and then I can have relaxation and I can travel. So you would do retreats then in different places?
Yeah. We did retreats and we spoke like we are doing on Zoom with clients. Yeah. And to me, it was then always, okay, I want like whatever I'm doing here now, I want it to be fully remote, at least the option for it to be remote, mm-hmm. because I no longer want to have to go to an office. At that time, it was really important to me that if I want to go there, I go there. But if I don't want to go there, I don't mm-hmm. go. I just want to be location independent in that sense. Yeah. And so we build it all like that. Yeah. But it's funny. We did retreats in different places in Spain and in Bali and Germany. Yeah. Wherever we were. But one-on-one was the main thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So tell me, what is it that you like to work with people? What do you have them focus on?
You know, what's really interesting to me really is that whole area of overwhelm and stress, just because I've experienced it to such a severe degree mm-hmm. that I really empathize with people who are experiencing it. To me, it's really, again, every time it's really touching when somebody shares their struggles and, you know, always being torn between family and job and all those things. So I really enjoy working in that. And I would say how I do it, just because it helped me so much, I still believe so much in anything centered around mindfulness and then going from there. But really becoming aware of who you are and how you're functioning, right? Uncovering all those patterns that you live by. And I find this really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And shedding some light on that. I think that's like, once you have that awareness, so many things change. Yeah. Even without having to look at the behavior. Okay, now you wake up every morning at 8 or something. Yeah, you can do that, but it's more what's beneath that's holding people back, or that let them function the way that they do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is really interesting to me.
What are some of the things that you would ask people to look at to try and help them?
Yeah, so to me, it really is about, let's see, I can give you an example of like a recent person. Okay, we looked at very successful person, again, leading a large team, being in a high role in a big company, but being super nervous and stressed and just anxious at work, right? And then we looked at, okay, when is that happening? When are you feeling anxious? And he was just observing it throughout the day, what those situations were. And then we could uncover, okay, so what's happening in that moment? What is it? It's not even what are you thinking, but what is it thinking in the background somewhere in those moments before you have that presentation, let's say, for example. And then we could dig deeper and deeper and look at some of the beliefs he was living by. It's like, okay, if I don't do this, then I will lose my job or something. So, okay, is that true, right? Like, will you lose your job if that happens, or will that even happen? But he wasn't even aware of all those thoughts that he had at the moment, all those rules that he lived by. And so once we looked at them, they were popping up everywhere, right? Throughout the entire day. And once you're aware of them, you can also sort of stop that train of thought or stop that whatever you're doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's through that, I would say, awareness and mindfulness, and then becoming sort of like a detective throughout the day. See, okay, where is it showing up? Where can I intervene and not run on the autopilot program,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
which we all do the majority of the time. Right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Will you explain what you think mindfulness means?
Yeah. Yeah. That's always an interesting one, right? Like the official, let's say, definition. So like, what is it? Moment to moment, present moment awareness or something like this. Yeah. To me also, mindfulness is to notice what's going on. I just like really, really broadly speaking, okay, notice, okay, what's going on with me? What am I doing? What am I thinking? What's happening around me? Yeah, that's how I would define it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Notice what's going on. It's quite, quite colloquial. Yeah. But sometimes it sounds so, oh my God, mindfulness, and sounds really, oh, wow, what is that? But it's really just notice what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, paying attention.
Mm-hmm. And then trying to understand the beliefs that we have that create our thoughts, I take it.
Yeah, I think that's even the next step, right? That's beyond okay. that. I think the general moment mindfulness could also just be, okay, you're sitting somewhere. Do you notice, oh, my body's breathing. Oh, okay. The sun is shining. Okay. People are walking by. Okay. Oh, I'm feeling stressed. Okay. Right. This noticing. And then I think that the next step that's beyond goes even deeper than mindfulness, than the deeper level awareness. Oh, okay. I understand. Every time, I don't know, somebody cuts me off in traffic, I get really angry. Oh, okay. It's not even, it's this feeling of disrespect that arises within me. Oh, okay. Interesting. It's because I feel disrespected that I'm yelling at this person. It doesn't really have anything to do with the person. It's just me feeling disrespected. Right. Then you can dig deeper and look at what does that have to do with you?
Mm-hmm. Do you teach them how to say overcome these thoughts or how to deal with them?
Yeah. To me, then it is about almost creating like a new reality, right? Because there is this, I sometimes describe it almost like as a building. We're all living in our own house, right? Own foundation, load-bearing walls, that's the term, or like those pillars, whatever. And that's the world we live in. We each in our own house. We all think we're the same, but we are not, each in their own building. And we think that's what the world is like. But there's as many views of the world as there are people. And then it's about rebuilding that, questioning some of those rules that we live by. It's like, oh, okay, it's... I don't have to wear a suit to feel successful. Like in my case, wearing a tie has nothing to do with success. What is my new definition of success? Right? Then sort of rewriting the rules that you live by. I think that puts it quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the weird thing is we're all living by certain rules, but we don't even know we're living by them. Right? That's the tragic thing. if we were living by them and said, well, they're not serving me, but at least I know what they are. But we don't know the rules usually.
Mm-hmm. That's true. We just don't think about it. It's very true.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's all super arbitrary. Just like 8 hours work day, like we said earlier, all those rules they're all made up and they're mainly cultural, right? So easy example again is, what is breakfast? And now you tell me, oh, breakfast is, I don't know. But what would you say is breakfast? What do people have for breakfast?
I know it's so different in here. It's common to have cereal or yogurt or fruit or eggs. That's like common okay. here.
That's like breakfast, yeah. And then if I ask like a Japanese person, hey, tell me what's breakfast, or please buy ingredients for breakfast, and then they come along like with tofu and miso soup, and it's like, no, breakfast, not dinner, right? And then like a German person would bring like a loaf of bread and cheese. And you're like, what? No, we're not having a wine tasting. Please, what are you doing? Right? And it's all so arbitrary. That's the rule. And that's just like a very simple example. Like
exactly.
Breakfast doesn't really influence our life that much. But that's how it is with everything, really. It's just made up.
Would you say a good way to go about things would be to what makes you happy? What makes you feel comfortable?
That's a good way to start, because oftentimes we don't even know, or we don't look for that at all. It's like, okay, how does it make you feel? I think that's a really good way to start, because it's not a question we ask. If we're in the autopilot, just everyday sort of robot mode, that question never arises, right? It's just, okay, what is expected of me? What do I need to do? So that's a good way to start. And a funny story around that too. One of the therapists once asked me, what's your favorite tree? And I thought, oh, okay, now this is getting really weird, right? And thank God I'm not paying for this, but insurance does. But so what's your favorite tree? Yeah, I don't know, whatever, oak tree. And but I didn't even know what my favorite tree was. So, and just as an example, oftentimes we're not even aware of what we enjoy and what we like, compared to what is expected of us or what we think we should like, right? So, you should like this type of car, you should like that type of house or clothing or so, but maybe that's not even coming from you. It's another rule that you live by. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good question, sort of compass to go by. Okay, what do I want? Yeah. And I mean, there's so many like fun questions. Okay, does this add to me feeling happy or not, right? It's like, whatever I'm doing here, is this adding to my happiness, to my well-being or not. And we oftentimes then notice, oh boy, no, it's not, right? Or another one could be, is this adding energy or draining energy or so? And then no wonder we feel so tired at night because we've done so many things that are energy draining instead of
adding balance.
And of course there are certain things in life that we have to do. That's just what it is, right? That's certain things. Or now with children especially, I mean, you have three children, right? You've experienced this to bigger degree. I have two children only, but of course you don't want to get up at 3 in the morning and feed the baby. So I said, oh, does this make me happy? Not, no, it makes me very unhappy. But also this is what I agreed to when I had a baby. Yes. So I'm going to feed the baby and I'm good with that. And maybe I can get joy out of that as well. But there's so many other moments where we have a choice.
Absolutely. Yeah. What would you say then to help people deal with their stress level?
Yeah. To me here again, interesting thing is to first become aware of when you are stressed. I think that's the main thing, because we can purely look at behavioral things like, okay, self-care, so to say, okay, have a bubble bath every week. I don't know, what's your favorite movie every week, but it's sort of just balancing. You're still having the same stressful way of living. And now you're just trying to balance that in one way, or numb yourself in one way. Okay, watch Netflix for 2 hours and then you feel better, but really doesn't change so much of what you're doing. So what I like doing with people is having some sort of almost like a registry, or look at what are symptoms. How do you know you're feeling stressed? Okay, do I notice it in my chest? Do I notice it by, oh, I'm doing certain things? I'm smoking more than usual. I'm drinking more than usual, or I'm whatever I am doing or not doing, right, when I'm stressed. And then for the first time, we are becoming aware of, oh, wow, now I'm entering into stress mode here. Because before, we usually notice when it's too late, when it's afterwards, we notice it. But this is, we can notice it earlier. And then we can even have like an order. Okay, what is the stress symptom that shows up earliest? Right. Okay, breaking down the lobby is sort of like the last sign, right? That's again like the highway. That's when you're in San Diego, right? But what is the earliest sign when you're leaving Los Angeles? What is the earliest sign? It's maybe, I feel a bit of tightness here or so, or I cannot fall asleep or so. Maybe those are earlier ones. Yeah, and then it's our duty to question what am I doing here? What choices do I have? Right. And oftentimes we think we don't have any new choices, but what we do, we have them. But we need to notice, first of all, when are we stressed versus when we are not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what is now sort of the belief, the rule I'm living by that is guiding me towards doing this stressful behavior. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course it doesn't hurt to eat healthy and to move and like to do all that stuff. Like, I'm not saying, okay, like never go running because it's only sort of coping with stress, like do all that, but also work on what is causing the stress in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And what about meditation?
Yes, I'm a big fan. Yeah, I'm a big fan. Yeah. And again, I wouldn't see it as a sort of like, okay, now I work really, really hard for 14 hours. I don't eat. I do like all the wrong things, so to say. Yeah. Oh, but no worries, because I'm going to meditate for an hour tonight. That's probably not going to help so much. It's probably better than not meditating. But to me, it really is more, it's not so much about the meditation itself, like the moment of meditating. It's nice, it's relaxing. But it's more like going to the gym, right? You'll benefit from the gym, not at the gym, but in everyday life, that maybe your back hurts less and you're able to lift your babies easier. So you add the benefits later on. You'll notice the benefits later on. And in my opinion, that's the same with meditation. It's really, it is not for the meditation, but for everyday life. Because then you're able to all of a sudden notice what's going on. You're mm-hmm. able to notice your thoughts, notice your feelings, notice when you're feeling well, not well, or you react less aggravated at the highway when the guy is cutting you off, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan. I think it's really, really helpful. And it really helps for you to have that present moment awareness, the mindfulness throughout your day.
Mm-hmm.
So you're training that muscle in that sense.
Right. And what are some tips then to help people stay mindful or be in the present moment?
Yeah. Again, I think it really, and that's sort of the bad news, it really has to do with self-discipline in some way, right? With self-leadership. There isn't just, at some point, it's just up to you to
be aware,
to meditate or to not. Yeah, then it really is up to you. But, you know, like things that we do, like in companies, we do those little reminders throughout the day. Okay, now it's a mindful break or so, right? To have little things like this throughout your day. I'm a big fan, it's like an old school thing, like the Pomodoro technique, but like work 25 minutes, then have like a 5 minute break or so, like there's little timers and apps for that. But then it really is up to you to install some of those breaks throughout your day and until they become automatic, because in the beginning they're not, and you won't have time for them. Mm-hmm. Because naturally you won't have time. It's not like you're living a life and you've always planned little breaks just in case you ever want to start being mindful, right? They are not there yet. But then it's mm-hmm. really up to you to install some mechanisms for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think like a really good start, and that will be very difficult for many of us, is just to observe how often you check your phone, right? Okay, how is your hand moving towards your pocket, getting out the phone,
and
using that, okay, let me just play a game for 1 week. I'm going to notice that. I'm just paying attention to how often do I check my phone. Maybe I even have one of those apps or like on my phone shows me automatically every week how often I've checked it and stuff. And it's shocking how often I check my phone. It's like, what, really? Like 70 times a day or so? That's ridiculous, right?
Wow.
But it's just like the little, looking at the time or doing this, right?
Like
once you have one of those apps, you'll see, my God, it's ridiculous. And how many hours
I get like once a week, like something, and I'll say, you've used your phone this much. And I'm like, really?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And then it's on average 4.5 hours or so.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What was I doing? Yeah. And then of course you can justify, I was working on it for a little bit, but that's not the majority of the time usually. But I think that's like a fun game to start with, to just notice, mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Because we're doing it on autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
And then here and there, once everyone's like, okay, I'm just not going to check it now, but just breathe for a moment. Or just while I'm waiting for somebody in the restaurant, I'll just sit here, enjoy my drink, and just wait. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, I know what you're saying. It's I don't need to be looking at my phone. And it would be so nice to interact with people instead of seeing everybody staring at their phone. I mean,
yeah, it's really funny. If you in restaurants, right? If you see people, 4 people sitting at a table and at least four phones out, sometimes more.
No, I don't like it. On Thanksgiving, we had a very big Thanksgiving, and like a normal Thanksgiving this year. And I was looking around the room and everybody had their phone and they're staring at their phone. Yeah. And I'm like, this is so sad. Or the TV, you know, it's like, just you haven't seen each other in a long time. Just communicate and enjoy each other's company. Why are you staring at your phone? It's sad.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a good point, because we all know this. We're all doing that. And it's like, okay, just become mindful of that, in the sense of notice when it's happening. Because so often we don't even notice. It's just autopilot. And then we get sucked into that world. And like, that's a whole other story. But just the how automatic it has become to get out the phone. And it's really funny. You can observe your body then moving. It's like, my hand is automatically going to my pocket. And just, what am I doing? It's not my choice anymore.
That's for sure.
It's quite funny. So that would be a fun game to get started with this.
Absolutely. Type of work. What do you do when you work with companies to help with burnout?
Yeah. So there are similar things, really. There's some things that are very generic, just, okay, meditation is being offered, or like some body scan stuff, progressive muscle relaxation. Like those things are just being offered. People can attend them if they want to or not, right? It's not mandatory, because it has to be voluntary. Someone wants to do it. And then like in a recent program, then the company or the managers were allowed to choose some people who should participate in a deeper program, or they're being offered. Say, hey, Jack, if you want to participate in this program. And then we lead them through like a proper process of a few months with group sessions. And we're looking at their behaviors and looking at the stress patterns and when they notice stress, and then digging deeper with them. And exactly the same thing, looking at what rules are guiding you towards behaving a certain way that are adding stress to your life. Yeah. So it's a mix between very generic, very, if you want to participate, then do, if not, and then deeper work. Because I think that's really where the big change is happening.
Mm-hmm. And what about like work schedules or things like that? Is that addressed?
Yeah. Yes. And again, it will be different from person to person, but some people, if you then say, okay, so like you say, how is your day structured, right? Like when do you notice this? And it's just back to back to back to back to back to back to back. Right. There's like no breaks in between.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So how come you're not having any breaks? Right? Because we all, at least in the Western world, are relatively free. Like you can have breaks if you want to, like choice, right? And then, oh, interesting to learn why this person chooses not to do breaks, right? And they probably think, oh, I don't have time, like all those things. Yeah, and then it's to address
those. They need to make it a priority. Yeah, the work needs to make it easier for them, because I feel like, say my husband, he works from home a lot this past year and a half, but now he goes into work too sometimes. But I will see him basically sitting from 7 to 5, working a lot of times through lunch. He might get up and eat. And I'm like, you're sitting this whole time. You're not getting up and moving. Yeah. And why do you have, you know, work lunches? Why are you working during lunch? Why do you not have a break? And it's part of it is that old school mentality of, I just need to work, work, work. But I feel like the work environment, it's hard because you're working with people who are on the East Coast and you're on the West Coast. So they're not thinking about your lunchtime. They're just thinking, we need to have a meeting. And so how would you tell a company to address those things, or people to address those things?
Yeah. I think what you mentioned is really important, because part of it really is culture, because that happens in some companies and it's some, it does. And I think that's what we then say, oh, how is the culture within that company? Because I know companies that say, okay, the standard scheduling time, if you schedule a meeting, it's no longer 30 minutes, but 25, right? That's just, you cannot, of course you can do 30 minutes, but the standard thing that shows up is always either 5 or 10 minutes less than usual. So people have those quick breaks. I think that's a decision the company can take, like an easy one, for example. Okay, IT, please change the standard scheduling time for this. Or let's encourage people to have one company I did a workshop with recently has like a Wellness Wednesday every Wednesday or every other Wednesday or so. There's certain programs being offered. It's just having people become aware of, oh yeah, I'm allowed to look after myself. It's being encouraged by them, right? They even tell me, another company, they have, yeah, this Fridays for Future. You can use your work time on Fridays for personal projects, for maybe you want to change something here in the company. Maybe you want to offer yoga courses. Maybe you want to research something. It's just one day is, you can do whatever you want, whether work-related or not. And that then has to come from the company, right? There has to be somebody in there to convince people will be more productive if they're happier, when they're more relaxed, when they feel well. And there's numerous studies that show people are more productive then. So like your husband, I would challenge to say, if he works, I don't know, 9 hours straight without breaks or so, the 9th hour, or probably hour 5 to 9 or so, it could be more productive if he had taken a break, right? He loses in productivity throughout the day. We all do, it's just normal. Yeah. And then I think companies can encourage that through certain initiatives or programs or so. Right. I mean, there are even companies that say, well, they're not sending emails after a certain time. It just, they don't go out through the server. It's just being blocked.
That'd be nice.
And that happened. Like some people do that. Some companies, they've been delivered the next morning at 9.
I like that.
Yeah, but not 2 in the morning. And those things really, I think, have to come from the top, then the culture and the inspiration. And there's one company, SAP, you know, big company in Germany, an IT company, and they, a software company. And I know their head of HR, he has this little disclaimer in the footer that says, if you're receiving this email between or after 8 and before 6, don't feel obliged to answer. This is not a typical work day. I just have funny hours. I work funny times, but please don't feel pressure to answer now just because you're receiving
That's
this
nice.
Email.
Yeah.
So
I think it definitely needs to come with companies teaching that this is, you know, you need to be healthy. You need to take breaks. You need to not be working through your lunch. You shouldn't feel obligated. Yeah. So I do feel like that would help if they said things like that. And also just sitting is not healthy. And so you need to get up and you need to move. And it comes from you, a priority with yourself. Like you say, when you were working even in hospitality, if you realized what you were going through, you would say, no, I'm taking an hour to go for a walk. Like that would have been healthy for you, but
yeah, for sure.
So you have to put yourself as a priority as well. I feel like sometimes when you work for a company, you feel so obligated to them. You don't seem to put yourself as a priority.
Yeah, absolutely. I think really that's when the company has to step in and change something about the culture. Of course, the teams, and they can do that, but it is the general, like certain, almost again, unwritten rules. If you work for certain companies, that's what we do here, right? Nobody has to say it. It's just what's being done. And oftentimes, even when we speak with companies, whether or not they want to do something about this, they want to see some numbers or so, but we're going to lose money or so. But you can show some studies that if you introduce a mindfulness program or something, productivity increased by 12% or whatever it may be, then, that pays off really quickly. Let's do something like this, right? But you usually need somebody from on the inside who is sort of convinced of those types of things,
right? Yeah. I wish that, you know, if you came from how you wanted to be treated, if everybody would operate from that, you know, instead of like, well, I killed myself to get here, now you have to kill yourself to get here. I mean, it's like, no, you didn't enjoy any of that. Why would you want to do that to another human being? Let's change the system. So I think in the future, the more we discuss these things, the more these things will change. And I do think the younger generation is very open to making changes. And like you said, they're like, I don't want to work full time. Why do I want to do that?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think also this is sort of like a hidden gift of the whole COVID time and pandemic and whatnot, because there's so many mental health issues that even companies, they notice, okay, we need to address this because we're just losing so many people, so much staff, and we cannot operate fully. And I mean, now there is this time that German hospitality companies, they're coming to Spain now to look for staff because they just, like every hotel is looking for people because people just left throughout lockdown and everything. And with other companies as well, they need to be more attractive. And I think at this point, it becomes a little bit of a supply and demand thing. You need to offer more in order to attract people. Mm-hmm. And I think this will be one of the things in the future. Yeah. So companies naturally will think about those things because it's so funny too. Just like, it's, I don't know, like some big traditional companies, I don't, even Goldman Sachs or something like this. Like, oh my God, you're working at investment banking. It's no longer cool for many young people. Like, why would I do that? That's weird. Like, why should I work 20-hour days? Like, I don't want to do this. I start an Instagram challenge about dogs or something. I'd rather do that, right?
Yeah.
It's so interesting that the big companies that used to be prestigious, and it's losing in attractiveness. People don't no longer want to do that. It's like, well, why should I do this? That's not cool anymore for younger people. And so they will have to rethink their way of working and being. And I think one thing that they don't really realize, companies, is that they're no longer competing, like Goldman Sachs. It's not competing with, let's say, JP Morgan. It's not, they're competing with, as I said, Instagram or TikTok or starting your own little Amazon shop or things like this, what people could be doing instead, rather than sitting in an office in New York and ruining their lives. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I love to ask people, what do you feel humanity needs to work on to make our world a better place?
Okay, one thing 100% is again awareness. It's consciousness awareness. Consciousness awareness, it's people becoming aware of what's going on, who they are, what they're doing. I think that's, we can talk about nature, preserve the oceans, save the whales, blah, 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 all those things, but they're all a consequence of somebody becoming aware of what's happening. So that's the basis for me for everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's say if we were to introduce, let's say, mindfulness or meditation classes in every school, we wouldn't have to worry about people throwing away plastic in the ocean. Because nobody would have the idea. They'd be, oh my God, what am I doing here? And they would become aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by the way, that's why we have one project I'm doing. It's called 100 for You. It's where I speak at 104 universities around the world and lecture on exactly those things, on mindfulness. And
that's fantastic.
Because I feel, again, it's the younger generation. It's, if they learn about that, tomorrow will look very different. Yeah.
I agree with you. How can people find out more about you and reach out to you?
Best way is my website, janbroders.com, and LinkedIn. Jan Broders as well, under my name. Yeah, that's the best two ways.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Pleasure chatting with you.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.